This is the Retro Computing Roundtable, the RCR, show number 22, recorded live on Saturday, January 28th. But no matter where I go, there's one thing I'd like to know. Will I ever find my way back to Oz? We talk about computer history, news, and nostalgia. Why? Why? Because we love you. I'm your host this time around, and I could pass as a 3D rendering of Carrington Vanston. Minus the horns, of course. I'm in Toronto, Canada, land of snow and forgiveness. This week, we are joined, as always and ever, with two fine fellows. First up, he reads the Stan Veit's History of the Computer, Personal Computer, I can't say it, some podcast about Stan Veit. Yeah. He produces audio and video at the Classic Computing Podcast. He published the book, The Complete Historically Brewed. He makes the rest of us feel like slackers. Of course, I am talking about none other than the man, the myth, the legend, the guy who wrote this introduction and blackmailed me into reading it, David Grealish. How you doing, David?
Hi-yo. How's it going, Carrington?
How are you?
Good. Beautiful sunny day here. With back to weather topics.
What's new in Grealish land?
Oh, hold on.
Answer.
just like we were talking about before the show, just real work, unfortunately, taking up a lot of time. My, you know, real job, in other words, versus
that's not interesting.
Fun
I want to hear that you're fighting crime or something.
No.
Fight some crime.
It's crimeless here.
Okay, let's bring in our other fine fellow. Joining us today from Portland, Oregon, which I believe is the city of roses and the birthplace of Retrobit, fresh from his five-continent tour reading an autobiography called Dr. Strange Bits, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Apple II. Of course, I'm speaking of none other than the elusive, the reclusive, of the three of us, usually the least abusive, Earl, comma, Evans. I guess you'd be Evans, comma, Earl. Yes, Evans, comma, Earl. How are you, comma?
That's how you guys do it.
How are you, my alliterative friend?
So I'll have you know, Carrington, I actually have a 3D rendering of Carrington Vanston, and you don't look a thing like it. So,
oh, but I'm not posed properly.
There you go.
I am posable. So, okay, who wrote? I should have read it ahead of time.
Yeah, see, your introduction was awesome of Earl, but did you look at the one I wrote?
I did. Okay, we should, a little bit inside baseball, but we'll let people into how this works. We have show notes ahead of time, and we normally have a pre-written introduction. I, when I take over the hosting every three
yeah, they're
episodes,
only I'm
terrible for going a bit off book. I don't know. I look up from my iPad and I just start rambling. But I didn't look up in time to miss that whole why because I love you thing. Who wrote that?
Me.
Oh, that was very funny.
Yeah. Like I say, there's just meant to be like, you know, here's a guide or whatever.
Yeah.
But did you see the introduction for Earl? Read that one.
It says, Earl Evans in Portland, Oregon. He's like the Yoda of computer history podcasts and produced Retrobits podcast audio gold. See, I should just read what you guys write.
If I'm Yoda, though, I have to die in episode 5, and this is like episode 22. So
we're going to go back.
I'm long gone. No, 6? Oh, Star Wars fans are going to kill me now. It was 6. It was 6. Sorry.
Try not. Podcast you must.
Do or not do.
Star Wars show movies. How could we be 6? I'm sure there were only 3 of them. I insist.
Only 3 good ones. Oh.
3 of them. So, guys, let's talk about retro computing news.
All right.
I believe that David has offered up the first volley, something about someone named Bob. David, what do you got?
Thanks, Carrington. Yeah, I just wanted to mention, so I know I had mentioned it last show that I was editing it, and so I indeed completed the interview I did with Bob Cook. He was the founder and president of Sun Remarketing. And I didn't get a chance to review our last podcast. I don't know how much we talked about it, but did we talk much about Bob Cook, or I just kind of mentioned it, I think?
I never listened to the show, but
I think you just mentioned it, David.
Well, I listened to it at least... I do it, and then I listen to it at least once through editing. But, well, in any case, it's posted, and it's a very good interview, and I learned a lot about Bob and his company, some things I didn't know. But the main gist of, you know, Sun Remarketing was a company that is probably most famous for having taken the inventory of Apple leases from Apple, and then they would refurbish them and upgrade them and sold them. And my first computer, real computer, I call it, complete computer system was an Apple Lisa that ran like a Mac. And then there's also a famous story where Apple went back. Basically, they had them on, I guess, what would you call that? Terms where they're giving them the inventory ahead of time, and as they sell them, they paid for them. So they didn't own all the inventory. And so
Apple could seize it and dump it.
Yeah, so in late 89, Apple decided to come in and grab about 3,000 of the Lisas and ship them over to the local landfill there in Logan, Utah, and bury them, crush them and bury them to take
a chance. At what point are we going to see documentaries about people seeking out these landfills, these and the E.T. cartridge, and just go excavating?
Yeah, that's right. The E.T. cartridge is kind of a similar story, isn't it? Story.
In any case, I can't describe how much that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
That's just – oh, ouch. I just – anyway, go on. I'm in tears.
But Sun Remarketing also, you know, sold Apple IIIs for many years, you know, inventory that Apple got rid of. And then essentially they would sell older new stock and older used computers, mm-hmm. Apple IIs, all kinds of Apple stuff. They were he was also an Apple dealer. So, I mean, great interview. It's not too long and a lot of interesting stuff in there. And Bob's was a real nice guy. So anyway,
I was a big fan of Sun Remarketing.
So check that out.
And their ads as well. Back of – I know most – kids and stuff would read the back of comic books and look at the ads for, you know, you get your spy glasses or whatever and dream about that stuff. But I was the sort of kid who would read computer ads and stuff. And Sun Remarketing was one of the usual ones because I was into Apple IIs long after their heyday as well. And I'd always look at their ads and dream, oh, I could order that. I could order this. And so big fan of the company and the ads.
Yeah, me too. And just about the ads, that's why I always loved, even though I was primarily a Mac person, I always loved the Computer Shopper, which was, you know, that gigantic, you know, big old magazine. I would buy those and just lay on the floor and flip through it for a couple hours.
You know, you nerd.
Leave it and come back. Yeah, very much. So the other thing I want to mention, too, is since last show, I made an appearance on the Open Apple podcast.
Never heard of it.
A very good podcast, our friends over there, Mike and Ken. So have a listen to that. And specifically, there's a segment there where Stephen Weyrich, who's an Apple II historian, joins us. And Carrington, I think you know him, right?
I know him quite well. I roomed with him.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so you brought that up, I guess, when we did the show when you were there last year. So
I say a lot of things.
The whole show is worth listening to, but specifically there's a segment where we discuss the John Sculley interview and some particulars of analysis about that and the Apple II. And in fact, I think it's probably one of the best analysis and discussions I've heard. Obviously, I was on it, but I don't mean just what I said.
Do I have to read your introduction again?
Anyway, so have a listen to that.
Yeah, it's a great show. That particular episode was really fun, and I am actually a big fan of the show. Okay, next up, guys. Earl, you contributed this, and frankly, this is, I think, the most exciting bit of news we're going to talk about. Maybe I should have bumped it to the end of the show, because if I was listening, I would be turning off after this and rushing out to read more. I'm really excited about this whole brand new chip, I guess it is, something called a 6502. Sounds very exciting.
It's leading edge. I mean, you're going to be hearing more and more about this. I've heard that they're actually, you know, going to be making, PC clones off this. And let's back up.
That's what I want to hear is what you think, how it would be used.
Yeah, well, many, many years ago, obviously, you know, the 6502 came out and was the main chip in a lot of systems, the Atari, the Apple, the Commodore, and I think the BBC, right? Didn't the BBC Micro use a 6502 chip?
Did it?
I'm drawing
a blank on that. Probably everything seemed to use it.
But the big news here is that this chip has apparently been relaunched, is now available again in a 40-pin DIP package, which means you could grab one and just stick it on a solderless breadboard or make some cool, you know, like do-it-yourself hobby stuff with it. Now, you know, from reading, this thing was retweeted all over the place. Everybody was excited about this, but some people were pointing out the 6502 actually never stopped being available, but I guess maybe it wasn't available in this form factor or something.
That's my understanding.
Maybe it was a surface mount, or maybe it was
a core for an FPGA. Yeah, I think the big deal here is that this is a standalone 40-pin chip. It's not embedded.
Right. Yeah. And pin compatible with the original, although since
it's 14 megahertz, which is 13 more than you need. But
it is. But since it's 14 megahertz, people were beginning conversations like over on the Atari forums. They were saying, can I take one of these and stick it in my Atari? And somebody else was saying, well, I don't know. You might have to overclock it, or would it just run at 1 megahertz? We don't know. So, you know, still some unknowns out there. But I thought it was exciting news anyway. And I kind of wondered to myself, what would it take to get one of these and actually make your own little fun homebrew computer that you build around it?
Someone's got to call Woz and say, look, I got a challenge for you.
You got to do this right now. I mean, yeah. I've seen other people do similar things with some of these old retro chips. Like, I think you can still get Z80s, for instance, and put them in things. And with microcontrollers, you know, maybe it wouldn't be too hard to build the glue logic around this. I think somebody did it with a board that they called the Propedal, which is a 6502 chip and a propeller microcontroller on the same board. And the propeller microcontroller ends up being the glue stuff for the 6502. And so it's like, you know, your own little configurable computer. So anyway, something like that might be possible. But I just thought this was interesting. The 6502, it'll never die.
Never. I'm actually really excited about it. It does make me want to, you know, build a computer, do something. Like, it just calls out to me.
And it was used, even in this short little article, it was used in the BBC Micro.
Uh-huh.
But if you notice, it says that, so it was designed by Chuck Peddle. We're familiar with that name, but maybe not as much with a guy named Bill Minch.
And right.
He's actually the guy that owns that Western Design Center, the one that, designed this modern incarnation of it. Yeah, that's just my big question is, what do you do with it?
What don't you do with it?
But also, you're saying, could you pop it into an Apple II? I guess in that modern package they're showing, it wouldn't fit, right?
I think it's pin compatible with the original 6502.
Okay.
So physically it would fit, but whether the circuitry would work, that's an open question.
Yeah, I think it'd be a timing issue.
Right.
Though I'm not a programmer or a hardware person.
Well, it'll be exciting to see if somebody shows up at Kansas Fest having done something with this.
Yeah.
An overclocked Apple II.
Putting out the challenge. Okay, guys, let's talk about things we can do, speaking of Kansas Fest, but not speaking about it yet. We've got three vintage computer-related festivals, and you can parse that sentence to figure out which one I'm talking about first, coming up. First is Vintage Computer Festival East. It's going to be on Saturday, May 5th and the 6th, which will be the Sunday. It's at the InfoAge Science Center in Wall, New Jersey. You wouldn't think that that's a real place, Wall, but it is. I have never been to a VCF. I want to go to a VCF. So I'm attempting, it's in my calendar, I'm going to attempt to make this one the first VCF I ever attend, because it's not that far away from me.
Okay.
I'm just excited about it. Are either of you going?
I don't think so for me, because, you know, I've intended, you know, I'm definitely going to Kansas Fest this year, so.
But I really wish I was going to the VCF, though, because they've got a couple of speakers there that, you know, I'm just drooling over the prospect of seeing. I mean, one is Thomas Kurtz, you know, one of the co-inventors of BASIC. And the other, I think, would really interest, you know, you Apple aficionados would be Daniel Kottke.
Yep, he was a buddy of Steve Jobs in college and whatever, and built Apple One board. And I'm excited to see what he's going to have to say. So I'm quite keen on this VCF.
So I hope at a minimum, and, you know, maybe we can, you know, shoot a line over to Evan to see if they'd consider this. But at a minimum, it would be cool if they had videos of this available after the event. I mean, obviously, you know, there's got to be some advantage to actually being there. But I mean, it seems like these guys are too important to just let go without capturing the moment.
Mm-hmm. I
believe they always film it. As far as whether they always release it, I don't know. But
I just hope they release these.
Yeah, usually I think the keynotes and the main speakers, they generally, there's always a couple of cameras set up. So at least when I was there. Yeah, I might try to go. I just have, you know, it's in May. So what is that? That's into January. So that's 4 months away. Yeah, a little over 4 months away still.
I've just always been a computer language enthusiast.
No, 3 months. 3.5 months away.
Seeing one of the, sorry to step on you there, David.
Oh, it's okay.
Crush him. Oh, can you hear that too?
It's a little hard, listeners. You gotta understand, we're like almost as far dispersed geographically as we could possibly be. So it's not like we're sitting in
wrong,
the same
Earl. Room. Earl, we have David and I have a surprise for you. Turn around.
What are you guys doing here? That's amazing.
Okay, so let's go on to the next event, which may or may not be coming up. I know nothing about this other than it's a maybe thing. A CRAV convention may or may not be put on sometime summer-ish.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to the – I know you can't go to the page, right, Carrington? from where you're
– I can go to Pages. You don't know. You don't know my address. I'm out of Pages. The location would be Chico, California, 100 miles north of Sacramento. These are all made-up places though, so those don't mean anything. Probably a weekend affair. Maybe $40 for a booth.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot – has this been firmed up at all?
Well, other than this posting, that's all I know about it. Send it right, $10 to attend. The thing is that CRAV or whatever, it stands for Classic, Retro, Antique, and then Vintage. Computing. The
right.
VC, then the OMP.
There wasn't an actual computer called the CRAV, in case CRAV people are wondering. I don't know that one.
So it's so someone announced it in our fellow the Seattle. Well, your group, Earl. You know, the Seattle Retro Computing Hobbyists or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Someone right posted it in there, and I picked up on it. And so, you know, there aren't really any vintage retro things going on in California anymore since 2007.
Which is so strange to me. Like, that seems bizarre. Like, I would have thought you'd have one on every corner and stuff. It's crazy. So if you're interested in this and making it happen, like, now is the time for people to be jumping in. He's saying that what he wants to see is at least maybe, like, 10 booths, 20 would be better, and ideally like 50 or 100 people saying, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'll be there, and then that could make it go ahead. So it doesn't seem like a massive commitment for the number of booths and things. So what's the way that people could sort of get a hold of? It looks like it's Bill D. I don't know what the D stands for.
He created a Yahoo group. You know, I'll put the link in the show notes. So I would imagine if you're really interested, join this group and contact him.
Being out in California, I probably couldn't go, but I'm definitely in favor of more and more and more retro computer oriented events and things. Like every time I've attended one, big or small, it's such a fun thing to do. So
you have to commit, Carrington. He needs your commitment.
Who are you? Everybody I've ever dated? Okay, so I will, however, commit to the next one. Really quickly bring up something that our listeners may or may not have heard of, a little thing called Kansas Fest. Takes place in Kansas City, which is not in Kansas. I'm a little biased Canadian. Yeah. I'm a little confused by this whole thing, what's going on south of the border. It'll be July 17th to the 27th. It will once again take place in Rockhurst University in Kansas City, the made-up state of Missouri. And it looks like it's very likely that all three of us are going to be there. So we'll probably have more news about that coming up soon. But I'm quite excited to be hanging out with my fellow RCRs in person. And this will be my third Kansas Fest attendance. I cannot wait. I have big, big plans for this one. Hopefully lots of our listeners will join us.
I was just trying to look up why, because, you know, there's a Kansas City, Kansas, too.
I think it's the city, like, straddles the border. And so there's a bit on the one side, a bit on the other, and when they placed the flag down, it was to the right a bit. So suddenly it's a Missouri city. I'm really not sure. I've been there twice. I still don't understand.
Hmm. Yeah, me either.
I've now offended everybody in both. But that's my job here at the RCR. So let's get into some feedback. We spoke earlier, David, about your attendance on a competitive podcast.
Right.
But about Apple, so I forgive them, one I quite like. And we had a bit of feedback from
of them.
Ken, the Macho Man, I pronounced my name incorrectly, Gagne.
Yeah.
Gagne, Ken, come on. Gagne. So are we gonna play a bit of his audio?
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Ken Gagne of Open Apple here. Longtime listener, first-time caller. I loved the discussion on the last episode about copyright. The topic of abandonware is especially relevant to us retro computing enthusiasts, and you could talk for hours about that subject alone. As far as RCR goes, I'm wondering, who owns the copyright to the show? Is it shared evenly among us three co-hosts? Since the show is made freely available, any reason it's not licensed under Creative Commons? Or is it? Thanks again for supporting our community with a great podcast. Keep up the good work.
Clearly, Ken intends to resell our podcast for money.
Yeah.
I think that's the only way.
Why is he so interested, you know?
Exactly. Suspiciously interested, Ken. Suspiciously. We fought about it before the show. It was an angry, bitter argument, wasn't it, guys? It's terrible.
I'm still bruised.
Right. Yeah.
Don't ever talk to me like that again, Carrington.
Years of therapy.
How, David, you can tell us. You started this whole shebang. How is this thing licensed?
It's mine. All mine.
He said, putting his pinky to the corner of his mouth.
1 million episodes.
Well, right. We discussed it. I mean, so we're all in agreement, right? We've decided to go with Creative Commons. It's just, yes. It's something I've being a longtime podcast listener and a blog reader, I guess, and stuff, I've seen this so many times, and I guess I understood Creative Commons, but didn't really didn't know anything much enough about it or whatever. So just hadn't thought about it.
We didn't really think about this stuff. Yeah. Much more professional.
Just jumped in.
We are. So, but yes, Creative Commons, which means you can do stuff with it. Just don't go sell it. We'll make sure that we post the licensing info and tags and that kind of stuff. We'll be launching a new site very shortly, and we'll make sure we slap restrictions all over that with Ken Gagne's right. face on it and a little slash line through it. So well, Ken can't sell this.
Well, Earl, you can tell us what's the exact license?
The specific Creative Commons license would be by attribution, non-commercial, share alike. I actually think I got that backwards. I think it's non-commercial, share alike, by attribution. It just generally means you can't sell it. You can take it and slice it and dice it and do anything you want with it as long as you don't sell it. There's one other interesting thing. We really need to think about whether or not we want the share alike. And we could talk about that off air. But
Sharing good?
Sharing is great, but if you license it share alike, that means anybody that uses segments of your show also has to license their show by Creative Commons, and we may not want that restriction. So we'll think about that, but definitely it'll be by attribution and non-commercial. And it'll be free. You can take it, you can do stuff with it, just don't go sell it and make $1 million, and if you do, cut us in and we'll think about it.
Now, I was all in favor of making this show fully commercial. I want $15 a head for listeners. And you have to recite my name.
But then we'd have to put DRM and people would crack it,
I love DRM. It's my favorite thing ever.
Uncracked versions would be posted on Usenet.
I love crack.
It'd be... And we're going to edit that part out, too.
I just edited it in. I can't say edited. There is no past tense for that word.
Edited.
Okay, guys, let's move on. We have... successfully thwarted Ken Gagne's attempt to make a living off our work.
Actually, let me add something real quick, Carrington, before we move on, though. Just a thought.
Who's host here, David?
I'm sorry.
Who's host?
But along the same topic as all, before we move on, let's say we decided, things grow and get more popular, and we decide to, as we create the podcast, we start announcing, the exact, which we kind of do anyway, but we start streaming it live as we record. Let's just say we ever decided to do that.
Cool.
Which is possible, at least, right? And some
That'd be awesome.
Shows do that, Twit and all that. How does that change that whole licensing aspect? Because then you're
It doesn't.
Cause it's the same thing. It doesn't matter that it's streaming live versus a recorded audio clip, huh?
Doesn't matter. And I mean, if you notice, it's interesting you bring up Twit, because This Week in Tech licenses under Creative Commons. And as you've seen, they have live, live.twit.tv, where they stream the recording of their podcasts. And also they have the podcasts on the RSS feed where you can go.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
I think a bigger question is, you guys both have significant others. I'm single. Hear that, ladies? Single. And what happens when I start dating the next Yoko Ono and I force her to also be a member of the RCR and on mic, and then she completely undermines everything we do? Have you thought of that? Have you thought of that, David?
Yeah, that'd be terrible. She starts changing things, demanding stuff on the show.
Because that's how I roll, David. I'm just going to bring it.
And then she's in the background saying stuff while you're on air.
I think then the band breaks up and we go do solo projects.
Yeah. Awesome.
Right.
I like
but
it.
We do one final podcast on the roof.
I will push you both off. I'm going on record now. Okay, guys. I'm the host. I'm cracking the whip. Let's move on to Commodore. Oh, it's hard to say that word. Commodore in the movies.
Yay.
Earl, you've got a YouTube video to recommend to us.
This YouTube video is fun. Just really quick, it's lots of different sightings of Commodore computers of various makes and models in feature films. So some of the films I was familiar with, I actually saw the Pet at the end of Terminator 3 when they go into the little bunker and, it's like, wow, this computer stuff is old, and there's a Pet sitting there. But, City Slickers, I had missed that one. I didn't know a Commodore was in there, and a few others that I knew. And there's also lots of movies here that are look like international films that I haven't seen.
Foreign films.
But could be familiar to folks, so just go see it. It's got a fun, little chiptune soundtrack along with it.
It is actually fun to play spot the computer in it.
So, yep, and we'll have a link up in the show notes.
And I just want to comment, the very first scene that they show, let me see, I'm sorry, trying to get there. I think it says it's from the movie 23. I'm going to assume it's a German movie, But I lived in Germany, you know, for almost 2 years back in 91 to 93. And I, you know, I tried to learn a little German, and I would occasionally buy a German computer magazine. But in the background, there's a big thing that says 64er on the wall there. And I used to buy that magazine, or bought a couple of those magazines. So, I mean, I'm just wondering if they filmed that scene in those people's office or something.
Yeah, I don't
know. They must have filmed it. So anyway, that's all. It's just that jumped out to me, that 64er I saw right away.
64er.
Like, yeah, have you ever heard of that?
More 64 than possible. 64 est came next.
Where you can learn about all the new computer spiel.
And yeah, now we've offended all the Germans.
No, that's what it's called, computer game.
You're so offensive, David. No, so offensive. Sorry. You're lucky that I'm here
Darn
to
it.
Moderate that. Okay, let's stick with YouTube. I, ladies, still single, I am going to be recommending a really fun old-school computer and technology remix of The Animals' House of Rising Sun, performed by a printer and an oscilloscope and a scanner and just their little squeaky noises. But they do a really good and fun rendition of House of Rising Sun. It's on YouTube.
That is
definitely
cool.
Worth checking out. It's this band plays a couple of different songs that you can find on YouTube. So we'll have a link to the Animals one, which was my favorite. It's just really fun and really accurate.
And it's amazing how they can do that, which, you know, I'm familiar looking off to the side in YouTube. One that's been real popular, as far as I know, not that knowledgeable about it, is the Imperial March done on like hard drives and stuff. Have you guys ever heard those?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is amazing. So it's just amazing people making, you know, music out of this stuff.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. Just, you know, a couple of minutes. Very, very fun. And it will lead you down a little YouTube rabbit hole looking at other sorts of things like that. Or at least it did to me. Yeah. Awesome. David, talk to me about Abobo. And I don't mean the country of Abobo. I think there is a country called Abobo. I want you to talk to me about Abobo and adventures. Go.
Well, I inherited this topic. So, basically, Abobo's big adventure went live on January 11th, and The Rage was released. And you can, and so you can enter Abobo's domain through the show notes. Abobo's, I won't keep on saying Adobo, you know, but Abobo's Big Adventure. It's basically just an 8-bit game online.
But the fun twist is that you're playing Abobo, who, I guess, in case listeners don't know, he was the first boss in Double Dragon. So the guy with no shirt, huge mustache, huge head, easily defeated. But
I remember.
Strangely, has become like this cult following. Everyone loves Abobo, and he now gets to be the star. And in Abobo's Big Adventure, you fight against many very recognizable characters from old school 80s arcade games.
That is,
but yeah. It's fantastic. So it's fun to play and play spot the game. So as you're fighting things, you go, that's Donkey Kong. That's Double Dragon. That's this. Oh, it's like lots of – it's mostly Nintendo stuff, and it's hilarious and fun.
It looks so authentic,
too. Play online. It's just – it's great.
They completely captured the look and feel perfectly.
Absolutely. The game's hard. I'm not very good at it. It keeps kicking my butt. But it's really, really fun. So you are the large-headed Abobo, he finally gets to be the star rather than the easily defeated first boss. So it's just abobosbigadventure.com. I've been waiting for it to launch for ages. It's like I said, it's now out. It's a little flash game, so it's totally free to play on the site. Great execution. It's totally a run, don't walk thing. I completely loved it.
I'm going to play it on my iPad right now.
Oh, can you? You cannot.
I can't.
Ha! You have been thwarted. Okay, guys. Now we have a segment that I pushed for us to include again, and then I really struggled at first to think, but now I have a long list, and it is fun retro computing gifts. So these would be gift ideas. We're going to each recommend one quick one each show, and these are, if you've got someone in your life who is a retro computer fan, what could you buy them for a birthday gift, a Christmas gift, a whatever gift, hey, it's Wednesday, just thinking of you sort of gift. Again, ladies. Single. So, David, what are you going to recommend? What is something that somebody could get for the retro computing enthusiast?
And yeah, this is going to get harder show after show, isn't it?
No, I made a whole big list. So
I took a fairly easy way out, though these gifts would certainly be more appropriate for someone who's more hobbyist nature, you know, because this has to do with building things and, you know, and soldering and such. So I basically put a link to Breel Computers, Vince Breel's page. And the one I was thinking of was the kit that I have, which I have not built still. I intend to, but it's the Altair 8800 Micro. The thing is, I went ahead and put the whole page here, because if you go to look at that, you're going to probably end up looking at the other stuff he offers anyway. So I might as well mention it. So the Altair 8800 Micro is, you know, very cool, little miniature reproduction of the Altair 8800 with the little switches and the lights and everything. It's a $200 kit. You can actually buy it assembled for $279.
But that's not as fun making it yourself.
No. But so while we're at his site, though, a couple of cheaper options and other options. For instance, a reproduction of the Apple One called the Replica One, which is now the TE version. And that's $149 kit, $199 assembled. And, I mean, he's got many other things here. But another one to mention would be the Micro Kim, which is a $99 kit, $149 assembled. So he's just made a lot of neat stuff like this. He's got a pocket term, little pocket terminal. A kit you can make. So check that out. These
and
all be
I will recommend the
gifts.
A2 MP3, which is what me and a number of people built Kansas Fest.
That's
it was
probably
an incredibly fun project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and quite easy to build. Like if you're totally new to soldering or to what have you, well, one, I would recommend going to one of these events where Vince will be there to assist. Like
exactly.
The hands-on. Oh, what a fun thing to do. But it's a kit that's. You know, very clear instructions and really easy to assemble. A number of people did it at Kansas Fest, and it was their first time ever, like, doing any hardware thing, ever soldering, and everybody was successful. So it's a great kit to start with.
And I don't know if he's announced or, you know, maybe he'll be at this one this year, or maybe at the VCF. I don't know. I know he lives in California now.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, if you can participate in that where he's there, it's great.
And so what about you, Earl? What would you recommend to purchase the retro computing fan?
Shockingly, I went with a site that has lots of very fun and popular Commodore add-ons.
No.
There may be static on my microphone.
It's called Retro Innovations, and this site has many of the fun things that Commodore folks either have or drool over. The 64 NIC Plus, which is a cool Ethernet card. The Micro IEC, which is a way for your Commodore to use a SD card as its mass storage. The Zoom Floppy, which is a cool way to hook your Commodore to your PC via USB port, and lots of other stuff. Jiffy DOS, which speeds up the otherwise incredibly painfully slow Commodore disk drive connection between the disk drive and your computer. And anyway, so take a look. It's actually store.goforretro.com, and we'll have it in the show notes. But a lot of the items here reasonably priced. So if you're after, you know, like a little less of a budget-busting gift for that retro enthusiast that you know and love, you might be able to find something here. If they're into Commodore. If they're not, it's, you know, unlikely.
He's got the Zoom Floppy on sale, in fact, for $35. So, yeah, it's a great deal.
And I know a couple people who have that particular device and really like it. So,
well,
so that's my thing.
So both of you went and recommended sites that have a whole bunch of things that you could have saved back to recommend individually. I believe, listeners, they will both one day come to regret that. I, on the other hand, smartly made my list, will recommend an individual item from it. And I'm going to take the cue from our audio feedback person today. Well, we thwarted, yes, I'm saying thwarted, Ken Gagne in his attempt to ruin us commercially. Nice try, Ken. Nice try. I am nonetheless going to recommend that for the retro computing enthusiast, particularly an Apple-rated person, a subscription to Juiced GS. It's the longest running and still published Apple II journal. Do we call it a magazine? What do we call it? I call it fun.
I call it a zine.
I'm a subscriber, and it's just one of those things where you subscribe. It's really inexpensive. I should have looked ahead of time, but it's something. It's
I have
crazy
my copy here.
Deal.
I think it's $19 for the US.
Yeah, so it's essentially nothing. And what's nice is you subscribe, and you forget about it. And then four times a year, you get this little surprise. You go to your mailbox, you're like, oh my gosh, I got a magazine that's related to retro computing stuff. And it's really well produced. It's well written. It's current. I absolutely gush over it. I love every time I get it. And I'm a subscriber and have been for quite some time. And I just adore it. So if somebody is an Apple II fan, it's an inexpensive and fun gift that would continue throughout the year. So ha. And only takes one item off my list. So I am prepared for future podcasts.
I have my current copy here. See, sound effects?
That could be anything.
It's $19 US, $27 international. Hear it?
Well, as an international subscriber, I still
hold it up to the mic. I still can't see it.
It's 5030, 5080, and deep researchers.
Introduce the world to the electronic talking machine. Since that time, AT&T
has been at the forefront of this technology, continuing to make it more human-sounding.
So that when one has to interact with a computer,
it can be as pleasant as possible.
In 25 feet, turn left.
The passion to invent, the drive to deliver. The new AT&T, your world, delivered.
Banking from home with the world's number one selling home computer with Intel Pentium processor. Packard Bell. Wouldn't you rather be at home?
Okay, let's stick on the theme of things to purchase, and let's quickly take a gander at our previous eBay auctions. I'm going to go first. I'm in charge. I pick me. Weirdly selected the B-29 Bomber Super Fortress Analog Mechanical Tube.
Oh yeah, computer. Did it sell?
How did it do?
It sold for $650.
Cool, look at that.
And $700 shipping.
Wow.
But it did sell. I don't know how many bids it got. I'm a little surprised it sold.
Does it usually tells you, doesn't it?
But what a cool item. So anyway, it did sell. Well done. So somebody has that en route from Chicago, my little mechanical tube computer. What about – let's look at how you guys did.
Oh, wait. David, before you move on, Carrington, did you see the follow-up? There was an email sent. Harmick from Australia emailed us and said, hello, I just found this video on the B-29 gun system and was not even looking for it. It explains a bit about one of your previous eBay findings. So that'll be in the show note. Watch this video. It's very interesting. Really cool.
Well, thank you, Harmick from Australia. Very nice. I hadn't noticed that feedback.
Awesome.
Oh, but the awesome. Innovation of how that thing works is amazing without, you know, transistors and stuff.
Yeah, crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Imagine what you could do with a 14 megahertz 6502 in it. There would be destruction. David, what did you recommend last time and how well did it sell? We will judge you by it.
Basically, I just did a search for – let me see if I can go – just for Byte on its own magazine.
Right.
And so I'm going in there to look at completed and see what I see. So I'm not really getting any results. So you can move on.
I'm judging you, David.
I'm not finding it. That's weird.
Byte collection.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm seeing some things.
Are you?
Actually, no, I'm not.
No, it worked
last
time.
I'm seeing a Byte article collection, just one of them. It's got one bid for $6. Mine sold for much more than yours, David.
Not important.
Oh, well. Earl, can you do that?
I can't top your auction price, no, but I can say that it did sell. I had a Seagate ST225 hard drive, and, you know, as for some reason is common with these guys, both the 225s and the 251s are capturing good prices.
I don't understand it, though.
Well, I doubt these are all going to deck collectors, you know, digital equipment stuff, but would they be? The 225 and the 251 are a particular value because you can hook them to this deck controller card. But yeah, that can't be it. These have to be going into what, vintage IBM PCs or something like that? It's got to be where they're going. Anyway, it sold for $56 and $11 shipping. So it was worth something to somebody, and it's worth something to me. Not quite
I
that
was
much.
More interested in your other auction choice, your alternate one, which I found fascinating, that the manual punch card
machine.
So I've noticed it's been relisted a couple times, and the price is gradually edging its way down. Mm-hmm. That right manual card is down to about $200 now. It's still a little out of striking range for me, but, you know, if it got much lower, I don't know. I might have to think about pulling the trigger on that.
Because isn't it the coolest thing? It's $200. There's still a couple days left to bid. I absolutely adore this thing. Like I that is one of the coolest auction choices we've had in a while. I think it's really cool.
It's right here in my area. I don't know if I had noticed that last time.
Ooh. So you could get it and bring it to Kansas Fest and demo it.
Oh, yeah. And then I don't know what we'd read the cards with, but
it's very cool.
Earl and I both vote that you spend the money on this.
Do it, David. So, yeah. So 200 and coming down. We'll see what happens.
Okay, let's see if we can convince David to spend some more money. David, what are you recommending that people look at in eBay auctions for the next 3 weeks?
I thought that I would look for handhelds or like PDAs, something I haven't really looked for recently. Cool. And so I ended up going with the Apple Newton, and I have two items real quickly. The first one I just wanted to mention just quickly, but it is a vintage Sharp Expert Pad, rare Apple Newton clone from 1993. It has a $499.99 buy it now. I kind of don't think it's going to get that much, but it'll be interesting to watch it. I have one of these. And so when the very first Newton message pad came out, Sharp made them for Apple, and Apple licensed it to them to make their own version of it. That's the one and only time they allowed another company. Well, I guess that's not completely true, because they did license the Newton OS, I think. In any case, this was, for all practical reasons, another company making the exact same Newton sort of thing, and arguably better because it had a cover, and then with the stylus that went inside.
Right,
but it's just kind of interesting.
2100, I think, had a cover, right?
Yeah, much later on.
I don't know my Newtons very well,
but the original Newton didn't have a cover, is what I mean.
Right, okay.
Where this one did. So anyway,
Do you guys know much about the Newton? What would be the Newton to get if you don't have a Newton and you want to play around with it? Like, say me, for instance. Is it better to go with the 2100? Is it make a big difference over getting a 100 or 110, et cetera?
I think from a collectible standpoint, perhaps the original one, because it's the original one. But from a you want to try to really play around with it more, I'd probably say the 2000 or the 2100.
Because I did have a Newton back
then. I never had
the
either.
Yeah, but not a 2100. I had one of the – maybe not the first ones, like a 110 or a 120 or something, I think. And I really liked it at the time, but if it was something I wanted to play around with, I'd be more concerned with, like, which Newtons have the most compatibility with the most software and stuff. Like, did the 2100, if it's way different, did it break compatibility with old things? Like, I'm pretty unfamiliar.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, maybe somebody can write in and recommend, like, what would be the best Newton to start with if you just wanted to play.
So my second item is just an Apple Newton Message Pad 100, vintage handheld system in original box, rare.
Ooh,
and,
rare.
And so currently it's got 2 days and 9 hours left, four bids, $23.50. So reasonably pretty cheap right now. So it'll be interesting to see what that goes for. Hmm. I saw some other ones, they're on eBay and they can be $50 to up to $100. So, but if you could pick one up for, I think, less than $50, that's a pretty good deal, especially in the box.
Right. So Earl, what have you got for us? Is it something strange and mystical?
No, this time it's a little bit
not, we're disappointed. And moving on.
Not quite as esoteric this time. It's a vintage K-Pro 2 computer. And the auction says very nice condition.
Yeah, it looks real clean.
I look at the various pictures here. It looks really nice. Now, they didn't test it completely to see if it works, but when they turn it on, it comes up with the insert diskette message, which is a good sign. That means that it's basically working and just wanting to boot the operating system. Doesn't tell you if the floppy's working. But the seller has really good feedback. I think that the initial listing price is actually not too bad, $99 for a K-Pro 2 in this kind of condition. Mm-hmm. And I love CPM computers, especially the old portables. When the Osborne and K-Pro 2 came out, which model of the K-Pro was it that was in the store that I worked at? Can't recall. But aren't K-Pros interesting to look at? These squared-off metal boxes?
Yeah, it's a really classic form factor. I like it with the little square box and the little built-in screen and stuff. And absolutely.
Yeah, and I like keyboards that aren't just all one color. And I always thought it was kind of nice that, there was a little bit of color there with the numeric keypad on the mm-hmm. K Pro. So anyway, that's why I like that particular brand, and I thought this auction was not too bad of a representation of one.
Nice. I like it. Good choice. I am not going with the suggestion that I saw somebody sneakily write into our show notes.
I was just trying to save you some time, Carrington.
So Earl seems to have recommended the I Adore My 64 Commodore Vintage button.
Oh, did Earl put that there?
I, on the other hand, don't. And I doubt you'll see me wearing that at Kansas Fest this year.
We should make a bet, some kind of bet, so if you lose, you have to wear one of those at Kansas Fest.
Yeah, you have to shave your head and wear the button. And so, you know, one out of two ain't bad.
I'm halfway there, totally.
But, Carrington, would you wear a I sort of like my 64 button?
I don't know. I wouldn't definitely not paint it on the back of my head.
With a hammer button. Yeah.
So, but in reaction to that suggestion, I've gone a totally different way and changed what I was going to originally suggest. Instead, I'm going to pick what I'm calling an Apple II collection starter kit. There's a fellow. It's kind of way out there. I think this is in Bulgaria or something. Yeah. But he has a ton of very positive feedback. Currently, there's 8 days left on this. When I first looked at it, there's three bids at the moment, and they weren't there then. It was cheaper when I first looked at it. Because what I like about this is it's got an Apple II. It's got still in the box. It has a monitor. It has the box for the monitor. It has a floppy drive. The box for the floppy drive. It comes with a whole bunch of manuals and stuff, and it comes with three very well chosen games in their box, including Karateka, which is a game in box that actually sells for quite a bit on its own.
Castle
and it's got Wolfenstein 3D or Wolfenstein and Beyond Castle Wolfenstein. Currently going. It's a little expensive, $237.50. But the neat thing is, it is on U.S. voltage. So it's Bulgaria. I apologize to our Bulgarian listeners. Bulgaria is on 240 or something, so it would normally not be compatible. But this system is compatible with North American voltage, that sort of stuff. And priority international shipping anywhere in the world. Which is nice. So you're not looking at some massive $300 shipping fee, which as a Canadian purchaser, for instance, a lot of times there'll be a really nice Apple II system available in the States and they'll want, $300 shipping to Canada, so something outrageously expensive. So while this is coming from overseas, it looks like a really nice setup and it's got free shipping. It really all comes down to what the bidding's at. This same seller has another very similar setup available, all the same stuff, but with different games and I believe no monitor, but still in the boxes. And also with free shipping. So it's just something to consider. You're interested in the Apple II and you don't have anything. It's a nice little sort of all-together startup kit where you get all the bits and collectible looking in their boxes and some decent software to play with it. So.
And it's brand new in box. I mean
– Yeah, I didn't even – yeah, I just picked up on that.
I'm telling you, this is going to go for a mighty price.
I think so too, but right now it's cheap, and I was hoping. And unfortunately, it's got 8 days left. I was kind of hoping it was coming near the end.
I'm going to make a guess and say this goes for $800.
Okay.
I think it could possibly, around there. So I'm going to actually say I think it might go for a little more than that. Might
I think
push
mostly because of the free shipping, which is heavy is a big advantage.
And I'm going to make an assumption here that I bet you this is an American system, as to how or why it ended up in Bulgaria. But
I think so too. I think it's collector purchased it and brought it out there. I believe it is a U.S. system.
And what's interesting about it to me is that arguably, I think it's fairly rare because it's the platinum Apple IIe and as well as the display and the disk drives are all matching, which put them at the very end of the run of the Apple IIe, but.
They still look nice. They're not all yellowed and stuff. And just it's a nice – if you really want
it's
a
really nice looking
collection,
yeah.
it's a nice set.
It's gorgeous.
So that rather than that button.
But I worked for an Apple dealer when this was out, and I really liked it. I always liked the Platinum. I liked the Platinum Mac Pluses, and I thought that the entire run would go to that. It's, I thought that's where they were going with it. And, they even changed the way Apple IIe, I believe anyway, the font that's used on the case there, I think – with the Platinums, but I don't know that for sure.
And I know you can get that little replacement for it where it says 2GS if you do the 2GS board swap upgrade and stuff. But anyway, I'm selecting it just because it's sort of like a lot of people would already have all this stuff, so it doesn't make sense to spend a ton of money to get it. But if you didn't have anything and you wanted to start a collection, it's a nice all-in-one, hey, look, I've got an Apple II collection with boxes and some fun games, and really fun games. I picked this one over the other one because I prefer these games.
I think you win.
Woo! I win.
But I think in reality, if you go, hey, I got a really nice Apple II system, the other person might go, hey, I got a girlfriend.
Oh, I lose. Oh, once again, it's high school all over. Oh.
I don't know. If you had this particular Apple II system, it's, you know.
I think I had this particular one in high school. Still, really, it wasn't close. So, guys, what have we got to wrap up? Anybody got something to add? Something exciting news?
Oh, wait, there's one more thing you have to do is the drawing for the book.
Oh, you know what? We do. I had a number of people enter a drawing to win some book. Any of you guys heard of what book we're giving away?
It's some old book I found. I want to get rid of it. It's taking up a lot of space.
I hear the author is a total hack.
That you find in your basement.
So we did. We had 10 people write in. I was kind of surprised there was only 10. What's up?
Yeah.
You win a book. Maybe everyone's bought it already. So yeah. It sold too well. So, but there's 10 people. David has pointed me to a little randomizer. So everybody's name has been entered. I'm going to use my little randomizer now as I turn away from the microphone. It's very exciting. I think I'm supposed to say I'm entering the steel titanium vault.
Does it make any noise, the randomizer?
Drum roll.
I don't know. My computer has gone to sleep, so I'm logging in. Here we go. Well, I have to turn away because my randomizer on my computer behind me. We are randomizing. It has come up with number 6. It's Jim Castleberry.
Cool.
Jim,
yay.
Won yourself a book.
Yay.
Well done, Jim. Way to email in. And you have live, won yourself an excellent, I was joking about it, excellent book. So that's fantastic.
Yep.
Thank you, David, for donating the book. That was swell of you.
Sure.
I love it.
We'll do some more of this, maybe. Down the road. I mean, it's other stuff. I don't
more
know.
More books? That's it. Yeah, David has announced we will officially be giving away many of his books.
So every three, yeah.
Ha, ha, ha. Earl, what about you? Anything to
little
suggest?
Fun ahead of me today. A couple days ago, I rescued a Xerox 1750 printing terminal.
Oh, yeah.
Very interesting device.
Can you teach it to sing an animal song?
Oh, we'll see. We'll see if I can teach it to do anything. Actually, it's a little broken at the moment. So I need to figure out, you know, it's got some little fault going, but that's half the fun, right? But I have to say it's in beautiful, beautiful condition. I've wanted a late 70s model printing terminal to go with my late 70s DEC PDP-11, you know, just kind of get a circa late 70s computer setup going there. And so I saw this in Craigslist and went out and got it. It's been sitting in a guy's basement for 20 years. Mm-hmm. But the nice thing is it was covered. It had a fitted plastic cover that went over the top of it that has kept it very pristine. So,
makes a big difference.
Yeah, if I can get this thing repaired, then it's going to be sweet like museum quality. So that's my day today.
How far did you have to go?
Oh, just it was in town. It
second
was,
base.
Yeah.
Earl's willing to do a lot for retro hardware.
Yeah, retro computing, it's a priority. So yeah, just a few miles away. So, yep, picked it up, brought it home, plugged it in. The guy was right. I mean, you hit the local button on the terminal, and it's not local. It's just they're going beep. So I'll fix it. I'll keep you guys up to date.
Nice. Yeah,
well, you'll be able to hear it from there. I mean, those old daisy wheels were pretty noisy. Mm-hmm.
I love a daisy wheel. Daisy wheels. Love daisy wheels. Something about that little spinning wheel and replaceable font things, and just always had a big fan of the letter quality printer. Mm-hmm. And the mechanical funk of a printer, something I actually quite miss. Yeah, love them. Love them. That's really exciting. What about you, David?
Yeah, you can even be nostalgic about dot matrix printers.
I can be
nowadays.
Nostalgic about anything. I'm nostalgic about breakfast.
What is going on with me? You know, I'm still trying to finish up another chapter of Stan Veit, and I've got a couple of articles that I'm working on. You know, I'm not a big writer, but and it takes me a long time to write stuff. But yeah, so I've got some new content coming up.
Will you be interviewing anybody spectacular? Rolling Stones coming over? He said jealously.
I've got some ideas.
Oh my goodness.
Of maybe trying to approach a couple of people, so I don't want to
shame me for my laziness.
Announce publicly yet.
Nice.
I'll tell you guys after the show.
But then I will blog about it. Yeah. Dude, I'm going to need everything you tell me.
Oh, hey, I know something I can announce. I was interviewed, in fact, and I tweeted about it. I was interviewed by Adam Christensen, who does the MacCast.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a longtime podcaster. In fact, his show was the first podcast I ever discovered and started listening to. And then thought, you know, this is great. I love this podcast and stuff.
Great.
So I wonder if anybody has a computer history podcast. And, of course, then I found yours, Earl. So yours was the first computer history
downhill
one.
Downhill from there.
But so he interviewed me, and it's been put up on the site, his site. And you know, talking about the John Sculley interview. And then it got into a little more just Apple history and that sort of stuff in general. So, yeah, so everybody check that out.
Nice.
Kind of cool.
Yeah, MacCast is great. It's been around forever.
Yeah.
I'm sure like 9 billion now.
And like we were talking about Twit, for instance, he's on MacBreak Weekly, you know, every so often with Leo Laporte and them.
Mm-hmm.
So
I'm a big fan, though. I've always been a big fan of MacCast.
Mm-hmm.
For Mac geeks by Mac geeks, absolutely.
Yeah, and he's a real nice guy, very genuine. No, that's all. Just he's, you know, seems like a very genuine, nice guy, like us.
Mm-hmm. I think Earl was saying something good about me.
Yeah, go ahead.
Pause and give him a chance.
I was going to say, I got to go with Carrington on this, David. You're becoming an overachiever, so you're my hero.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it.
Earl and I are going to be your lodestone. We're going to drag you down to our level.
You've been all over the place, man. That interview with John Sculley was a big win.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate it. And, I'm very happy about it. I'll be honest, I'm a little bummed because I feel like it got overshadowed a little bit by another quicker interview. A guy from I think I mentioned this last time, BBC did, where he met up with him at CES. And so that kind of didn't get as much exposure. I think in the long run, it'll get more exposure.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I kind of see some people making comments at some different, the Mac Observer and some other, it got covered by Forbes. It was covered there and Apple Insider. And there's always a group of people that don't even bother listening to it or reading the transcript or anything. And they just, you know, oh, now that Steve Jobs is dead, yeah, now he's talking all about everything and trying to change history and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Then that would clearly be people who didn't listen to the actual interview then. Because what?
Right.
You can't go off the forums. I mean,
give me their names, David. I will hunt them down.
But, you know, so just so, you know, not a lot of that, but definitely some. But enough about me.
Yes, more about me.
Yeah, more about you, Carrington. What are you doing?
Oh, I'm going to be – I got a friend coming over. We're going to be watching Scott Pilgrim versus the World. So.
Oh, I have another question for you, too, that just entered my mind. Because we got an email.
Good place for it.
They got an email from someone, and they said, whatever happened about your manuscript that was put in the little time capsule and all that, because you had mentioned it, remember, on a show a couple back.
Then I will tell you.
Yeah, you got to the end of the story, and you left us hanging.
Well, no, you were going to go check in on it.
So it's something that has been huge for me in my life since high school. I won that little award, just to recap, and an essay of mine about why I want to be a writer, put it in a time capsule here, 25 years time capsule up in North York, the Xerox Tower building, big plexiglass thing, and a bunch of things by people far more famous than some high school kid. In there, including like a book by Timothy Finley, who, by the way, stole my pen, and he wrote an inscription to like Canadian Writers of the Future. So it's in there. It'd be interesting. There's a letter for the mayor 25 years in the future, and all this stuff is interesting, and a little rolled up letter that you can see because it's a clear time capsule, a little rolled up essay from me about why I want to be a writer. And it's loomed huge in my life for 25 years, motivating me because I knew I'd have to go to the event when they opened this thing up and have to say, you know, justify yourself. I'm not a novelist. Am I even a writer? I do a lot of radio writing now and have done online writing. And while I've been paid for a lot of writing gigs, I'm certainly not known as an author. So, you know, it's been this big deal and just this thorn that I have to sort of admit basically failure after 25 years, but it's loomed huge and has been a massive motivating force for me for 25 years. So the day comes on the Saturday, and I go down to the Xerox Tower building to see, you know, what's going on and how are they opening this kind of stuff. And I get there, and the time capsule has moved from one part, like they've redone this whole building, but it's still there in this massive, massive lobby now, massively featured right near the edge of this huge atrium. And there is this giant plexiglass thing with the plaque beside it talking about like this is the day for opening. It's got the dates and all the names, including mine and that kind of stuff. So I go there, I look around and I go up to the security guard and ask him like, you know, when is the opening happening to that kind of stuff? And he has no idea what I'm talking about. What time capsule? So I explain that right behind him is a massive time capsule that's been there for 25 years. He's like, oh, I don't know. I have just some thing. I talk to management. They don't know about it. There's nothing planned to open
no
it.
No plans, huh?
Weeks have gone by now. I've contacted them saying, are you actually going to open it up? Nobody even knows. I can't convince the management that there is a time capsule in their lobby. I'm like, if you'll walk out of the office with me and go down to the atrium, I could point out the plaque. Nobody at Xerox knows about this thing. There's no plans to open it. I go by, my essay's still in there, trapped. Nothing has happened. The day that has loomed large in my life for 25 years came and went and nobody noticed. Gave me real perspective on how things that are really important to you aren't necessarily big deals to other people. It still hasn't been opened. I can't convince anyone to open it and just give me back my essay. I now think what's going to happen is someone will notice, open it up, eBay off the really important stuff in there and chuck my essay in the garbage.
I think it's more going to be like, we'll be reading, Dateline Toronto, Canada, crazed man goes into Xerox building with sledgehammer.
Or more like
that would be dramatic.
Xerox building with a, it's only screwed together. I looked at the bottom of it and I could bring down, it looks like a Torx bolt. I'm going to bring down some tools and open the bottom of this damn thing. I'm getting my essay. In a couple of weeks, some friends and I are going to run down and I'm going to basically make them give me back my essay.
Can you find, like in the library or online or whatever, can you find, a newspaper article about it? Or some coverage about it that you
Nothing.
Could then make a copy of that and give it to the Xerox people and the city hall people or whatever, because then they have to act on it.
Well, I think they would, but mostly because there's some stuff there. Like Timothy Finley, massively famous Canadian author, very important Canadian author, has a copy of his novel in there that he wrote something that nobody got to read that's a message for the future. He's now dead. So there's an important thing written by an important Canadian author, and the date has come and gone. There's a letter from the mayor that's supposed to go to the mayor of Toronto now, and nobody's read what that is. There's Sean O'Sullivan's silver medal winning boxing gloves are in there. They could eBay those things. There's a Sharon Lois and Brom record. But weirdly, it's Sharon Lois, Brom, and like Bill. I don't, who's Bill? Why is he on it? I don't understand. Or something like that. It's a weird fourth name. There's like things in there of value. Everything in there is of value other than my little essay. But the essay is what I'm concerned about, because that'll be the thing that gets thrown away. So anyway, that's where we stand at the moment. The date came, the date went. It matters to me, and nobody else gives a crap. So there you go.
What about like a museum that you have there?
Because I would have thought Xerox would use this as a press thing. Because,
You
bring down the current mayor, you bring down the representatives of Timothy Finley. They had this massive event when it was closed, because I went and I got to sit at the table with the girls from Cats, because they put a thing from Cats in there and stuff like that. And basically I just ogled them the whole time because I was young and it was awesome. But the date has come and gone and I can't seem to convince them they even have a time capsule, even though it's right there. Other people can see it. This isn't all in my mind.
You take them right in front of the eye. I don't see. What are you talking about?
Yeah,
that crazy. Is the weirdest thing ever.
So that's where we stand at the moment. It's still not open. I can't get back my essay.
You know what? The other approach.
Thanks for bringing
it up. You could, thanks for reopening that wound. No, you could take a camera down there, take a picture of it, post it to the internet, and say the time capsule that time forgot.
Yeah,
well,
you know what? Maybe, yeah.
You know, get the Toronto. What's the newspaper?
Oh yeah, there you go.
There's the Toronto Star and the Toronto Sun and the Globe and Mail.
Get them to carry it, like the time capsule that time.
You
forgot,
could write it.
I think is the letter to the
author, and I'll get my essay. My friends say it's because it's the world giving me more time to get a novel published. Basically, once I publish a novel, they'll open up this thing.
But you are a writer.
Causality.
So I don't think it's a failure. I mean, novels.
In my mind, I have wanted to write a novel for like 20 years, and one of the major motivators has been this. Oh,
right,
but sure,
right.
I've been published I have lots of short stories and poetry that have been published, and I currently write for some radio things, and I'm paid for that. So it's not that I'm not an author, but I'm not a novelist.
Yeah,
so in that sense, I say, that's splitting hairs. I think I failed on this. I still would like to write a novel. So we'll see. But anyway, that's where I stand on the time capsule for anybody who cares.
Yeah, well, keep us abreast of the
– Yeah, keep us up to date.
Yeah, so far, nothing. But I'm going to watch Scott Pilgrim, so there. Ha.
All right.
So I guess that brings us to the end of the show. What do we say here? That's a wrap. I'm gonna read David's words. David writes, "Thanks everyone for listening and supporting the show. Please tell a friend about it. Find all the discussions and links on the show notes. Write us an email. We do read them all, even if we can't always reply. Signed, With love always, David. Oh, David, that was nice. But anyway, listeners, you can. We do love getting feedback. I am absolutely awful at writing back to anybody, but I'm sure David and Earl are much better about that. I do happen to read everything that comes in, though. And you can write us at feedback@rcrpodcast.com, and you can follow us on Twitter. And somebody did recently follow us on Twitter, so we should actually start.
We've had a few, yeah.
And you can find us at RCR Podcast. So thank you very much for listening. That does actually mean a lot to us. That's the main thing, is just people spend the time to actually listen to what we blather about. And yes, guys, I'll do it. Until next time, retro compute.
Yes.
Yay.
Well, you must be wearing your cape.
Oh, always.